You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 309. This week, we talk about Silk, the life and times of Cindy Moon. Visit welcometocomics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
Glad we're all on the same page there.
Anyway, you guys have fun. I'm gonna get out of here.
Okay.
Peace out.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, he hasn't left yet.
No, closing the thing didn't. It didn't hang up the thing.
This reminds me, Brian. There's a time that I was on Skype with my parents, and we said bye, and they said bye, but I my hands were busy like feeding my daughter. They're just sitting there staring at the screen. And they said bye again. And we said bye. And I realized they don't know how to hang up a Skype call. And they were just like staring at the screen, kind of half smiling, like, okay, bye. How do you turn this off?
Like this.
Perfect. Well played. Well played, Brian. You guys want to talk about this comic?
It's 9:45. Yeah. Do we have to?
I just want to talk about Star Wars for another hour again.
No, I really don't want to know. Like, I just don't want to know anybody else's opinions about Star Wars anymore.
That's so
You've
sad.
Heard too many.
See, this is... that's what's so sad, though, too, is it's like... This is something we love, and we shouldn't be tired of reading
Like, here's
about
the thing.
It.
Like, I genuinely feel that if you don't like it, that's fair. I just don't care what you think anymore.
Yeah. All right. This week's comic, then it is.
Actually, have you guys watched Runaways yet?
Yes.
Aw. Have you, Andy, have you watched Runaways?
On no. Hulu? Oh, I really want to, but no.
Did you, David?
No, I haven't.
So, okay, I will say I am a total just butt turd about TV, and that's just who I am. So I don't like many shows. I would give the first episode a try. I didn't watch past it. Tonally, it was very 2017. Take that as you will. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't for me. I think that probably a lot of other people will enjoy it. And that's a good thing.
I want to check it out. I mean, it's one of the kind of those things that I like forgot about it. And yeah, then I heard, saw a commercial for it.
And there's a lot of good nerdy TV coming out too. So it's like hard to keep up with all of it.
Yeah. Also, Andy, I know you don't like Funkos, but when I went to the comic book store today, they had a Booster and Beetle 2-pack
cool.
And it, like there, I got like the shiny metallic version.
Yeah.
Just because it made Booster shiny.
That's awesome.
It's cool. Like Ted looks really good, and he's got like. The goggles are clear, and then they have, like, the painted eyes behind them. It's pretty nice. I like it. It's cool. I was going to send you a picture, but then I forgot.
No, that's fair. And then I was at Michael's looking for frames for stuff that I had gotten signed. And I went down an aisle that I didn't know existed, and they have, like... This is going to sound so weird. They have, like, dollhouse accessories. So I bought a couple mugs of beer and some wine glasses and a bottle of champagne. And it really helps Thor to have a bottle of beer in, or like a can, awesome. A mug of beer in his hand.
That's cool. That doesn't sound weird at all.
It just sounds weird because I was like, oh, hey, cool, dollhouse accessories. as a grown-ass man. But I was like, fuck yeah, Thor's going to have a goddamn beer.
Dude, that works. It makes sense.
And there's also a wine and cheese like platter. So I've got that next to Cassian and Jin.
It's awesome.
It works out. Okay, this week's comic. We'll do it for real now.
This week's comic.
This week we read Silk, The Life and Times of Cindy Moon by Robbie Thompson. This is the last in our New Heroes series. So we've spent some time looking at heroes that have been created in a whole new canon when we read Fathom. And last week we read Voodoo. I'm already trying to block it from my memory. I'm saying the word Voodoo. But this week we read Silk, which is Marvel's new character from recent times. 2015, I think she was introduced, or maybe 2014 when Spider-Verse happened. But this, I feel like, is a way better way to do it than the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
And I really appreciated the mechanic with which she was introduced. I didn't read Spider-Verse, but reading this, I got all the background I needed. The idea that she just like got her powers and then got locked in a bunker for 10 years. Like, it's Marvel. That happens.
So actually, about there's something I was a little bit confused about that, because when she was talking to Reed Richards, she said something about being from an alternate universe.
Apparently.
Oh, yeah.
But this comic makes me want to read Spider-Verse.
Yeah, it does. Me too.
I really liked this comic. And I was actually a little bit disappointed because it ends the way it ends. It's like, okay, now she found her brother. Now Secret Wars.
Yeah.
It's like, do I have to read Secret Wars? But there actually is a series, a Silk series post Secret Wars.
Yes,
I think.
So this is technically trade number zero, and then that's trade number one. Which I got to the last one, and there's sometimes like when we pick up a trade, and we generally pick up volume ones, maybe some volume two and three every once in a while, but sometimes an event will butt its way in. But sometimes it's like this, and it's just super frustrating. And it really makes me... Like, I'm never going to read Secret Wars. I don't pick up that many singles, and I'm not going to go back and pick up those trades and hobble that story together. And so for me, trying to read Silk, like, this is just an interruption in what was otherwise a really good story. And I really wanted to know how her finding her brother panned out. And I really wanted to know what was going to happen. And instead we get this whole, like... The world is ending, and there's these parallel universe here, and she's just like, yeah, it's here, apparently. I don't know what's going on. I'm like, it was a real big interruption. It was otherwise a really good story, and I feel like they probably should have just ended the trade at issue 6, because that had a good ending, too.
So I think, because we have this, you know, like I said, I have the same complaint, but I want to clarify that does not, I don't think that's the fault of this comic.
No.
It was just a timing thing because Marvel decided to do Secret Wars. So even though I was disappointed in that, I don't think it takes away... Like, I'm not going to hold that against this comic because that was clearly an editorial decision.
Yeah, and I think my level of disappointment shows how much I like this comic. Like, I was disappointed because I couldn't read more of this story.
I went to see where, like, is there more? And fortunately, there's, like, three more trades that are post Secret Wars. So I definitely want to check those out at some point.
Yeah.
But anyways, what did you guys think of this comic?
It sounds like we all kind of liked it, huh?
Yeah, it was good. Dude, the minute I opened it and saw that, like, first page, it's just, like, the full page spread where she's punching... Dragon Claw?
Yeah.
Pokemon guy.
His name? Yeah, Pokemon dudes. I was like, yes, this is going to be excellent. And I was not disappointed. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I really think there's sometimes where I want to start off with talking about the art, because you talked about a full page spread. There's times when like the art is a style that's complimentary, you know, like Hellboy and Mike Mignola's cover kind of style and his way of drawing monsters, and the stark contrast leads to awesome shadows, and it's a really complimentary way of telling a story. And there's sometimes where the facial work and the body language of the art allows you to tell a story visually in a way that is unique to the comic book medium. But I feel like this is a really, really good marriage of narrative style and visual style. And it's not that either one necessarily needs the other. And it's not that this makes for a unique story that only exists in comics. But I think this is, when you read a comic that has a really good marriage between the two, it really shows. Like, the way that Cindy Moon speaks and the way that she moves through this world is portrayed so well in this art. This art feels like Cindy Moon speaks. And it's such a weird thing to try to articulate. But it's one of those things, like, it doesn't happen often where you get a really good marriage of artist and writer. But this feels like one.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I think that, especially in more recent comics, you see this more... It's more finely done art, like thinner lines, less shading, you know, less heavy black shadows, and a lot more detail. And this is more cartoony. It actually reminds me of like the new Archie comics, the ones written by
Mark Wade.
Mark Wade, yeah. And I think that cartooniness lends itself well to the characterization of Silk because she's so... she's not naive, but she's like new in this whole game, right? She's still figuring out like what's going on. There's still like a little bit of like childishness about her, or at least like this kind of innocence. There's like a lot of innocence with her character, and I think the cartooniness lends itself to showing that really well, especially in things like the facial expressions where she's like trying to quip. And she's just like, oh, I can't do it. And, I think it's probably, I don't know, I'm not an artist, but it seems like it'd be very difficult when you don't get to portray half of the face. But they did like an excellent job just showing what she's always thinking. It's like she wears her heart on her sleeve and it's all in her eyes. You can totally see it. Like every conversation she has, every situation she's in, she's super expressive, even though the mask covers half her face.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love the art for this. I think they used one artist for like 4 issues and then different artists for the next few.
Yeah, I noticed a change over too.
The one that really stood out to me was the 7th, but before that it was kind of not seamless, but it did a pretty good carryover.
Yeah, they weren't super different stylistically, so it wasn't it wasn't a harsh transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talking about her naivete though, when she runs into Hector on the street, the ex-boyfriend.
Oh yeah.
And you can see the heartbreak in her, but it's like you've been gone 10 years, like. There's no expectation, nor should there should be. And I understand why you're hurt, but I also kind of got in the moment like she expected time to stop everywhere else too. And that moment was heartbreaking because it's like when she realized that it didn't. I'm like, I know her parents are missing and she's finding them, but like she, the rest of her life is a constant series of, oh. It's so sad.
But I think it makes her likable. And I think this is actually, this comic really stood in sharp contrast to Voodoo. Because, I do think that this is, like, the real quality difference, where this comic focuses on, like, one or two plot issues. The main driving thing is Cindy Moon is trying to find her family. And then underlying that, she has this kind of weird feud where Black Cat and Black Cat's henchmen are going after her for reasons only kind of known at this point. And that leaves a lot of room for the writers to explore, like, what's going on with her emotionally. We have all these like brief interludes where, like, as you mentioned, she meets her first love again and he's engaged to someone else, or she's alone in the bunker, or just like she's trying to kind of have this weird, awkward, I guess, post-relationship friendship with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it's just those little things that show you who she is. So, you know, by the time she's doing stuff like trying to find her brother, we care about that because we care about her succeeding. It's not just like Cindy Moon being like, I'm a good guy, or maybe I'm a bad guy. Who knows? I'm going to fight a lot of people. So, like, I think this characterization, especially in, like, the first volume of Betrayed, is super important to making you actually like people.
Yeah, I mean, what really drew me in for Hera was when Dragonclaw comes back with, like, the super suit version of Dragonclaw that actually looks like a dragon. I like the way that the like, suit-making guy is like, how do you feel about being a real dragon? And I was like, oh, no! Oh, God! But it was just, like, a suit.
Yeah.
I was, like, really terrified because there was, like, a chair and I thought it was going to be, like, genetic augments and weird shit. But, like, she punches the shit out of him and she loses control. And she's kind of like, you know what? This is kind of your fault. But let's talk about you for a minute. Like, that's when I was in, when she lost control and she was like, but you threw a car at me. So you kind of deserved a little bit of it. But also I went out of control. So let's talk about what you're doing. And, like, she's, like, I think it reminds me, there was some time I remember when Kyle did something like this. And I liked it there, too. Like, you lay it on the table. Like, I've beaten you two or three times now. You know you're not going to get anywhere. Let's not fight. And let's actually figure out what the fuck is going on here. And maybe I can help you in a way that's more productive than punching you even harder. And I like that. Because in comics, as a medium, like, the villain is supposed to represent something that the hero overcomes in themselves. And Dragonclaw is obviously not that character for her. But in a way, he represents the way that she needs to move on. Like, she can just continually be punching this guy. She can continually be punching, you know, her problems, and banging her head into a wall. But she needs to move on from that past. She needs to move beyond what seems simple and easy and look at other possibilities. So I really like that she was, like, willing to just sit down with this guy. And even Peter, later on, was like, I don't work with bad guys that much. You know? And it was nice that she was just like, this is the way I'm going to do it. And if you have a problem with it, Peter, you can leave, but I'm here with Pokemon, dude. Like, yeah, stick with your boy.
It reminds me of the Flash a little, like how he'll go to the bar at the end of the day and just hang out with his villains. And I really love those interactions, and I appreciate that Marvel is doing something with that too, because it's also like, okay, so they made him the villain with the heart of gold, right? He's not actually evil. He just wants to, like, save his daughter, and he's kind of maybe a little scummy, but aside from that, he's kind of interesting, and it's neat to see how she's just like, oh, yeah, I mean, maybe don't work for Black Cat. And that's just kind of, like, she's not judgy about it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think she's definitely very compassionate, and she's willing to, like, hear everybody's side of the story.
The other thing I really liked about her, like, as a positive personality trait, was that in the flashbacks where she's a teenager, she is not the bad tropey teenager. Her parents find out that she has, like, the spider powers, and then she is just, like, a very vulnerable character. You know, she's she talks about how she's scared. She has this moment with her brother when, you know, he says that he's frightened of her, and she's like, I'm scared too. And he's like, no, you scare me. And you can see the hurt. There's never any brattiness. There's always, like, so it establishes, like, the hero thing. Like, why would someone come out of a bunker after 10 years and try to find their family, but then be a superhero in the meantime? We don't really know that, but if you're the type of person who would voluntarily go in to try to protect your family, if you are the type of person who is a teenager, like, is really compassionate to your family and the people around you at that time, like, I think that speaks well to her character and just gives us some, like, good reason why she's in this game.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, her depth as a teenager too, in the flashback, it starts off with her telling her mom, I hate you. But then you also get the moment of vulnerability when she discovers her powers. And it's a really good balance, because you're right. Like, it's so easy to see the tropey teenager, like, kids are dumb because dumb kids are dumb. I hate you, Mom and Dad. I hate you. You're the worst. Ugh, life. I'm going to go on Twitter. And I love that J. Jonah Jameson calls her Analog.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a great nickname that he would totally use. But, like, there's that, because that's part of being a teenager, but there's also the fact that, like, she's still a kid, and those are still her parents, and she's still going to turn to them when she needs help. And I appreciate that we get to see that. Because I think also the trope for the hero discovering powers is to hide it from everyone. When she was just immediately like, oh my god, Mom and Dad, help me, there's spiderwebs coming out of my fingers. This is freaking me the fuck out, guys. Like, that's a way more, I think, natural and genuine reaction than hiding it in your bedroom.
Yeah, her character is... It feels organic. Like, she's a person.
What were you going to say, David?
Oh, I was basically going to say what Jen just said. But I will say, in Voodoo's defense, she's not a person. She's an alien.
That's true.
I feel really bad comparing Voodoo, because, like, the only reason we're comparing them is because we read them back to back.
Yeah.
Because they're not comparable at all. Like,
no.
No.
But it's just not a great...
But it comes back to what, it comes back to what I was saying last week. Like, for some reason, DC is in love with the idea of legacy to a fault. When they take characters and new stories that maybe they bend to a legacy of a hero, or tie it into a heritage or an older hero that doesn't necessarily have to be, and maybe it burdens the writing, and maybe they go back to that well when they don't have to. I much prefer Marvel's way of doing it, which seems to be give somebody else similar powers, or give somebody else a similar name, but change it enough that they become independent characters. Because at the end of the day, the fact that Silk has Spider-Man's powers almost exactly doesn't matter. Like, that's not important. You know, for an 8 or a 10-year-old boy, the powers of the heroes and collecting the trading cards with the stats on the back, like, that's pretty cool. And if you're an 8-year-old or 10-year-old kid, awesome. You know, get down for that. But, like, as an adult reader, which most comic book readers are nowadays, the powers that she has almost doesn't matter for the stories that you want to tell. A lot of times it does, you know, if you have, you know, energy draining powers, or, like, the Bat family and their resourcefulness, therefore it has to be part of their personality in a certain way. But for a character like Cindy Moon, spider powers, sure, it could be fucking anything. She could have the power of the sun for all fuck's knows, you know? Like, her power set doesn't matter. So if you just want to do a new character, just do a new character and insert them wherever you feel like you need to or can or want, or where editor says it's approvable. Like, don't worry about legacy. Don't worry about, oh, does she have to be spider this or that, or where does she fit into the Spider-Man legacy? Doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Call her whatever. Just make your new character and put him in the canon. And if people like it, print more. And if people don't, well, fine. You tried.
You know, that's really interesting. Like, I hadn't realized that, but you're absolutely right, Andy. And I think that's really cool, because, you know, I think sometimes people, not people, but I think sometimes characters are created because somebody thinks that would be a cool gimmick or something. Like, you know, the power is created before the character is. And I think it seems like with this, like, you know, she probably was created as a background character for the Spider-Verse, but somebody thought, hey, that's really cool, let's build a story around her that's not about being, you know... You know, they built a story after just after this character. I don't know what I'm trying to say now. I confused myself.
Yeah, they introduced the character in Spider-Verse, and she caught on, or somebody really attached to her, and they decided to write more. Like, that's awesome. That's what you should be doing with the event, not Secret Wars. Well, I guess Secret Wars introduced Singularity in A-Force, so she's been popular on the Tumblogs, at least. But I feel like DC doesn't do that. Like, when DC does an event, it's to change their reality and not introduce new characters. Like, sometimes we'll get, like, you know, Earth 13 version of Superman, but you know you're not going to print that. Well, except for when they did do Black Superman with Earth 2 and Earth 2 Society. I guess they do occasionally. It just feels more convoluted when DC does it. I don't know. Why has it got to be Superman?
Because he's... Nothing's wrong with... I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with Superman, but, you know, I guess you, people get Superman fatigue sometimes.
Well, and then there's the new Superman, Chinese Justice League.
Oh, man, I love... Dude, that comic was so good.
So good. I need to pick up more of it.
That's what we would have done for this if we hadn't already read it for New Heroes. But even then, that's Superman powers. I guess for this, you could say it's not a new hero because it's still just Spider-Man's powers put on a new person.
But like you said, this one succeeds because even though it is Spider-Man powers on another character, it does not succeed because it's a spider, because she's a another Spider-Man. I think it's successful because it's a good story. Right?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think you could make a really boring Spider-Hero. Like, it's easy to just look at those powers and be like, well, that's been done so many times. But they made something that is engaging. Like, she's cool. I would read about her if she didn't have superpowers. And I think that's kind of the key. And I feel like the best heroes are like that. Like, I don't know. Peter Parker stands out so much, not just because of his powers, but because of the types of choices he makes in the comics and his quippiness. And, like, he has, like, a fully fleshed out personality. And they do that with Cindy Moon.
Yeah, and I mean, I can say the same thing for a lot of Marvel's characters that they've introduced in the last few years. Like, I'm not really... Like, I don't read Kamala Khan because, oh, inhuman bendy powers are cool. Like, no, she's a cool character. I like that, like, when I think of the things about Kamala Khan that I like that she was a fangirl of the Avengers. And, like, on the Marvel version of Tumblr.
Posting
stuff. Like, what draws me to that character.
She's awesome, and I love her. I wish she weren't bendy, because I hate bendy characters. It's a gross power.
It's also way overdone. There's so many
bendy. Yeah. It's unnecessary. They need a new power.
Yeah, there's Plastic Man, Elongated Man, Mr. Fantastic, Monkey D. Luffy. It's like cross-genre.
Hey, you take that back about Luffy. What? Luffy's not bendy.
Yeah, he's rubber.
He's literally made of rubber, Andy.
That's true, but like 90% of his power set is rubber. Or not rubber.
100% of his power.
Sorry, I misspoke. 90% of his power set is bendiness and stretchiness.
Yeah, but Mr. Fantastic's not invulnerable to electricity.
That's true, but he's a puddle.
Ew.
Oh, no. He's not a puddle.
See what I mean? Puddle's bad. Like, your superpower should not be being a puddle in your natural state. That's not a power, that's a detriment.
But that's Odo's power.
Yeah.
No, Odo's power is his assholishness.
his curmudgeonly condition.
Yeah. Like, Odo wouldn't be near as great if all he did was hang out in his bucket and get plagued by people. It's the way he's such a jerk to everyone around him that makes him so delightful.
No, it's Quark that makes him delightful.
Yes. Well, Quark makes everyone delightful.
Yes.
They're just an amazing comedy duo.
Yes.
All right, glad we got that.
Anyways, set. We're like going off.
off the rails. I also liked the Johnny Storm and Silk's date.
Yeah, that was cute. I thought that was going to end up being cheesy and bad, or like dramatic and bad, which is even worse, and it was just kind of adorable.
Yeah, I think sometimes Johnny Storm can come across as like kind of skeevy and stuff, but he was, I thought he was used to great success here.
Yeah, and I think this is the way you should characterize a person like that, because you're right, so much of the time he does come off as slimy almost. I mean, I really don't like that characterization, because then that kind of character should have a reputation in the Marvel Universe, and not in a way that's positive, and not in a way that I think one a member of the Fantastic Four should, especially not like the like founding family of the Richardses and the Reeds. Like, that I think would be going too far, but I like this. I like that he's just like, I like her. She's hot. She seems nice. I don't want to spend time with her. And everybody's like, you're a dog. You think everyone's hot, and you want to spend time with everyone. But, like, that's not a fault, right? Like, the fact that he's attracted to a lot of women and that he seems to genuinely just want to get to know them and spend time with them, that is okay. There's a certain genuineness in his man-whoring here that makes it okay.
Yeah.
You know? Because I know people like that who are just, like, you know, man-whores just because they like to go on dates and get to know folks. And that's okay. That's not a bad thing to just get out and get to know people. It's a bad thing if you, like, almost roofie them. Like, because you're so pushy or something. Like, there's the bad kind, but this comes off as genuine and organic for him in a way that's, he says flame on. She's like, really?
Yeah.
That was a good one.
I think it also works in contrast to Spider-Man, because Spider-Man's like, no, fuck off, dude, no. And Johnny Storm is just completely undeterred by that. He's like, no, she's real pretty. And I think it added more cuteness to it. And then the fact that, like, their date was super awkward until they just jumped off the balcony together. That was a good moment.
Yeah, like, I kind of like Peter in this, in that he's protective, but almost to a fault.
Yeah.
I think Peter is trying to, you know, he there's the whole, like, responsibility thing with Peter, and I think he probably feels that towards these other spider characters, especially Silk, because he brought her into the brought her back into the world, right? Mm-hmm. And he is a little bit overprotective, but I think, like Cindy, he's very genuine in his concern for her. And I think everybody came out of this comic looking really good.
Yeah.
From my personality perspective, this comic just felt genuine. Even like Black Cat wasn't like super murdery or anything. Not that she usually is. But her character just came across as really genuine too.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought about that, but when you said everybody came out of this looking really good, I think that's what I appreciate about it. A lot of times when you have a new hero, or a lot of times when you, I feel like it's so tiresome when I pick up a new book and there's somebody who has, like, a dark side to them, or a secret they're keeping, or, you know, and maybe this comes from watching too much TV. Like, the reason my wife and I stopped watching Arrow and stopped watching Flash is because everybody had a secret and nobody just fucking communicated. You know, like, there doesn't have to be a dark side to Peter. Like, Peter can be protective without being possessive. Johnny can be a womanizer without being slimy. Like, these people can be themselves without having to have that dark, seedy, real, gritty underbelly. Like, this doesn't have to be there. You can just have real people trying to get through the day and be nice.
Yeah. And it
can be compelling.
Even the villains work out. Like, okay, so, as we said, Dragon Claw, that was kind of like a tropey thing. But Black Cat, where, you know, she's like, well, I'm trying to get you because you cost me a lot of money. And Cindy sees right through it. She's like, no, you're embarrassed. You're embarrassed by the fact that you didn't just outright win our last fight. And that humanizes her, too. She's not just being mustache twirly evil. She's doing something that is, like, an incredibly human thing to do. She's feeling bad about getting beat.
Yeah, when she falls down and crunches a couple times on the fire escape, I'm like, this is where the luck runs out. I was like, oh, that hurts. Oh, that sucks. And I felt bad for Black Cat, you know? Even though she's a quote-unquote villain here.
Well, she also didn't seem that bad. Like, I don't think she ever outright did anything that was, like, super evil so much as, like, I don't know. mildly greedy.
Yeah. I like how, what was it? Silk was like, I thought you were one of the good guys. And Blackhead's like, oh, you must be new. Oh, you don't know how this works. I flip like every other week. That was a good moment. And it makes it so you don't have to see her as bad right away. Like, she does flip back and forth. And it sets up the idea that, like, in two more months, she'll flip back. So you can't demonize her too much. Because she's going to be a hero again before too long.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to see a Cindy Moon Black Cat team up at some point in this run.
Yeah, probably.
There was the one cover, I think it was like issue 5. And it's Peter and Cindy on the cover saying, freeze! And then Black Cat on the bottom going like, nope.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It's like, nope, not going to do it. Sorry, bye. Well, it sounds like we all just kind of like this.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah, it's always harder to talk about comics that we like a lot.
Well, and I'm also like a little taken, like, I'm a little, like, on the wrong foot here, because the last 2 weeks have been so easy to talk about. There's just so much fodder.
Yeah. Do you guys have a favorite, like, panel or scene?
Oh, man. It's not a good one. Like, positive, but when Hector is like, I did call Harvard. I called them 9 times. You never applied. I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like, that hit me right in the feels really effectively. I was like, not only did Cindy get caught out, but like he really cared and just got tossed aside in a way that wasn't right. And you can see that he still cares, that he still wishes he had that opportunity. Not like right now, like get on it, but like he still hurts from that having happened to him. And that was just, there's so much to communicate in just a couple frames. And like, just, I can see, I don't even have it, like, I had it open earlier today, but I can still see that panel of him just being like, oh, Cindy? And like his face just dropping. that like got me right there.
I think my favorite single page probably is the last page in that same issue, Andy, where Dragon Claw first appears in his new costume, and it's like he's chasing her, and she's just swinging through the city. I think it's just a cool splash page.
Yeah,
that's probably my favorite piece of art in the comic.
So the one with the yellow background and the web and like the S behind her. And
yeah,
that was a great spread.
And she has like the spider sense, the silk sense, little squiggles.
Silk sense. Legally distinct. Yeah,
just a great, great comic.
What about you, Jen? Did you have a favorite spot?
Just that first page. I had been beat down by the last 2 weeks of comics. It was not a good time. And just opening this up and seeing that first page where it's like, okay, this is going to be like classic superhero comic. It's going to be like actiony and dynamic. And I was just like, yeah, it got me into it immediately. And it's also just like a great opener, like a way to introduce a character where she's just punching this dude.
Yeah.
And it's delightful.
It's warm and comfortable in a way that appeals to every comic book reader.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get down and rate it. But before we do that, I want to take a minute to thank Robbie Thompson, who wrote this, Stacey Lee, Annapolo, Martello, Tana Ford for doing pencils, Ian Herring for coloring, Travis Lanham for letters, Nick Lowe, Ellie Pyle, David Lewis for editing, and everybody else who's associated making this thing, because we can sit here and talk about comics, but it's a different thing to actually create them and put them out in the world. And if you hadn't made it, if creators out there aren't creating, we aren't here to sit here and talk about it. Like, what we do is easy, what you do is hard. So, thank you so much. I realize that, like, we never talk about how the rating works. It's a 1 to 5, 2.5 is average, and all the measures are completely subjective. So, whatever the hell you want to rate it, you want to rate it. But yeah, 1 to 5. How about you go first, David?
Oh, man, I knew it. So I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go with the 4.5. I mean, the reason I'm giving it, like, I loved this. It was such, maybe it was in the context of what we had read recently, but I as soon as I finished this and I realized that this was the end because of Secret Wars, I was like, this can't be the end. And I went and searched for more to read. And, I'm going to buy the three remaining trades because, Comixology is having a big Marvel sale right now. So they're all like half off.
Well, and they're on Marvel Unlimited.
Oh, they are? I bought it on Comixology, but I'll find them on Marvel Unlimited then. But the only reason I didn't like give it a 5 is because I don't think it's like a capital L literature comic. but it was just a really enjoyable experience to read this comic. The story's great. All the characters are really genuine and stuff. And you know, I just had a good time. It wasn't trying to do anything crazy. And I think it's good to have that kind of experience with reading comics sometimes, considering all the like events and things we get all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 4.5.
All right, Jen?
Also 4.5. Like, I just had a lot of fun reading this the whole time. I was turning the pages, like, what's going to happen next? It was fun. It was light. It's been a busy week, and sometimes reading comics for a podcast, it can be, like, just a lot of reading to do. But this one, I was like...
Are you thinking about Fathom when you say that?
Yeah. Or even, you know, sometimes we'll read just like a totally solid comic that, you know, it's good and I enjoy it and I'll like give it a 4 or something in my rating. But then it feels like it takes up my time to read and it just feels like this thing I have to do. This one, I was like, it was over before I knew it. And I was like, where's the rest? I need more. I was excited to read this and it sucked me in to the point where I wasn't worried about all the other stuff I had to do. I was thoroughly entertained. I like David, I'm not going to give it a 5 because I'm not sure like I can't really call it the best of the best. It's missing something for me to be able to say that. But you know, I just thought it was fun. If someone was looking to get into Cape comics and wanted something like a little new, I'd be like, read this, definitely read this. So yeah, 4.5.
All right, I'm gonna be the downer, I guess. Not too far down though. I'm a little torn, honestly, because this was really good, but I feel like there's a lot of really good comics out there today. And even this discussion, like we brought up Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur earlier, and Kamala Khan and her run, which then leads into Captain Marvel's reboot, and new Superman, who is awesome, and some of the Earth Society 2 stuff, which is not bad. There's a lot of good comics out there, and I think I want to rate this one highly because, like I was saying earlier, this is a really good marriage between artist and author, in a way that really works, and the style feels like Cindy Moon, and that's definitely an endemic to comics and needs to be there. But part of this also just feels like, you know, the comfy pair of jeans and the warm blanket. Like it's not capital L literature, so I don't want to go too far. But I do want to recognize this is really good. I'm torn because there's so many good comics these days. And while this is a really good comic, it's also not like great. I really did like it and I really do want to go read more. But I don't know if I'm going to actually do it. Because there are so many good things out there that I haven't caught up on. There's so many good comics. But that doesn't mean this one's not also good, I guess is what I'm going to come around to. Because there's so many good things out there, there's so many great things to read, it doesn't mean that it all can't be great, I suppose. So I'm gonna give this one a 4. I'm going to settle on a 4. I was debating a 3.5, but I'm going to go for a 4. Just because there's other great stuff out there doesn't mean this isn't great too. Yeah. 4. All right.
Can't believe if you've done this, Andy.
Oh, I fucked it all up. I was supposed to be the 5. No. All right. So after this, we're going to do our best of 2017 series starting next week, which I always like. We used to do like the best of 2017. It was like three episodes. But speaking of how there's so many good comics out there, our list of best of 2017 candidates was like 30 comics long. And we used to try and organize them like, these were Marvels, these were DCs, these were everybody else's, these are the graphic novels, and these are the trades. And like the standalones versus the starts. Like, it's so hard to pick. So we're just kind of, there's some that show up on every list. So we're doing those. And there's some that we just picked because we're throwing darts at a board. And we've heard about them and want to try reading them. So we're going to do 9 episodes for our best of 2017. So we'll be done with best of 2017 in March. But fuck it, I don't care. I don't care because they're going to be good comics and we're going to have fun reading them. And it's going to make up for Fathom. So next week we're going to read My Favorite Thing is Monsters by Emil Ferris. Then we're going to read Shade of the Changing Girl by Cecil Castellucci. Then we're going to read The Best We Could Do by Ty Bui. Then Doom Patrol Brick by Brick by Gerard Way, which I read the first issue of and is real fucking weird. So that's great. Then Everyone's a Alibin When You're a Alibin Too, a book by Jami Sun. And yes, it has a typo in the title. I'm not fucking up. Then we're going to read Beowulf by David Rubin. Beowulf showed up on like one or two lists when I surveyed like 10. But the three of us have all translated Beowulf. So we kind of have to read Beowulf. Like it's kind of, it was our thing in college. Independently, more or less. Like I took the Beowulf class with Jen. And then David had taken it a year before I did. Like we can't not read Beowulf. It shows up on the list. then we're gonna read The Flintstones, by Mark Russell, which sounds so weird to say, but I'm on Tumblr and Facebook, and every once in a while there will be a thing where The Flintstone shows up in a like surprisingly subversive commentary on modern society in The Flintstones. So we have to read that. Then You and a Bike and a Road by Eleanor Davis. We've done Eleanor Davis before, and Jen is a super fan of Eleanor Davis, so we're going to do Eleanor Davis. And then we're going to also do Roughneck by Jeff Lemire, because we really like Jeff Lemire here, so we're going to read some Jeff Lemire. There's a bunch of stuff that didn't make the list. Maybe we'll get back around to it later. I really want to do a Tom King arc, because there's like 3 Tom King books on the best of 2017. So he's been killing it. We did Vision, and he was killing it. We did... what was the one? Not Outsiders. Omega Men. The Omega Men was also Tom King. That was pretty good, too. But that's later on. We'll get to that. Anyway, that was a crap ton of episodes that we have coming up and comics that we're going to be reading. And then we have even after that plan. So we have the first, was that 3-4 months of the year planned already? So if you want to see what we do have coming up, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, hit the button that says future shows, and that will all be there. Right now, our past episodes, past shows, page is broken. Hopefully it'll be fixed by the time you hear this. Got my fingers crossed. It's a pain in the ass. I hate CSS. I really do. I know it's great, but I hate it because it's frustrating. And I'm not a coder. But they're there somewhere in the ether. You could go to iTunes and find us there. Stitcher is archived there too. Anywhere that it has been posted in the past, you can find it there. If you like the show, you can go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and support us for as little as a penny and let us know you love us and support us for more and get perks and cool things and be a voice and help us decide what we do next. Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, My Favorite Thing is Monsters by Emil Ferris, which is just a great title. My Favorite Thing is Monsters. There's a kid in my daughter's class who he comes every single day to the daycare wearing a monster on his shirt. And every single day I sit down and like play with my daughter a little bit before I drop her off and pick up, and this kid will come over to me and say, "I'm a monster. Arr!"
That's amazing.
And I'm like, "You are. You're awesome." Anyway, My Favorite Thing is Monsters by Emil Ferris. That's it. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.